How else but through those who adhered to the Jewish way of life and spread the Jewish teachings did the word of God become known? We were your radiant vessel, the proof text of your miracle. The visual image here is powerful. We can visualize these Jewish heads, once aglow with the splendor of Jewish learning and Jewish belief, now reduced to skulls or smashed into fragments of bone.
Welcome to Season 2 of The Stories Jews Tell, a weekly podcast with Professor Ruth Weiss, brought to you by the Tikva Fund. Today, we'll be reading Without Jews by Jacob Gladstein. This season of the podcast is sponsored by Robert L. Friedman.
Welcome back to the stories that Jews tell and the poems they write. Given the chance, I would have wanted to do a full series of podcasts on the American Yiddish poet Jacob Gladstein. So it is a pleasure to speak today about at least one of his works. This poem, Without Jews, was written just after the Second World War. It's translated here by the American Jewish writer Cynthia Ozick, one of whose stories we are going to be discussing next week. Gladstein was an exceptionally intelligent and witty poet, and it took an equally sharp intelligence, like Cynthia Ozick's, to capture the force of this poem. Gladstein had arrived in New York as a young man of 17 in 1913, just before the outbreak of the First World War. Among the tens of thousands of immigrants who had crowded into the city over the preceding decades were quite a number of aspiring poets, and these poets, benefiting from the freedom of America to experiment with new artistic forms and subjects, were by then already publishing their work in Yiddish magazines and books. Gladstein attended night school, learned English, and then studied law. But he too had begun to write poetry, and he soon gave up the law for a life in literature. In 1919, along with two other Yiddish poets, Gladstein issued the Manifesto of Inzich, or Introspectivism. This was the most ambitious such mission statement in Yiddish literature. As its name implied, in sich, in the self, influenced by psychoanalytic insights, insisted that poetry filter everything, ideas and politics, as well as emotions and experiences, through the prism of the poet's consciousness. This had implications not only for a poem's content, but also for its form, because in order for such a poem to be truly personal, they said, it would have to break away from such hallowed conventions as fixed rhyme and meter. What was required, to use the then new term, was free verse. As it happened, this new form lent itself very well to Gladstein's experimental poetry of ideas, even though eventually, as we shall soon see, this same poetic freedom would lead him back in the direction from which he had come. Dedicated poet as he was, Gladstein was also an intellectual, one who by the mid-1920s was working as a newspaper editor, columnist, and literary critic. In 1934, an extended trip back to Poland to be at the bedside of his dying mother exposed him to what was happening in Europe. Once he returned to America, he wrote with growing anxiety about the dangers now facing the Jewish people on every front. These concerns never let up. The writer who once emphasized that poetry must be filtered through the individual self began to compose as a member of and a spokesman for his people, including the dead who could not speak for themselves. Let me read this first in Yiddish and then go through it in segments. On Jiden wird nicht sein kein jüdischer Gott. Gehen mir Cholila weg von der Welt, verlässt sich das Licht von dein Orem gezelt. Sint Avrom hat dich in Wolken der kennt, hast du auf alle jüdische Penne mehr gebrennt, von alle jüdische Augen gestrahlt, und mir haben dich geformt in unser Gestalt. In jeder Land, in jeder Stadt, ist mit uns euch gewähner Gär der jüdische Gott. Jeder zerschmetterter jüdischer Kopf ist ein verschämter, zerbrochener, göttlicher Top, weil mir seinen gewähnt dein lichtig Gefäß, Der Wortzeichen von dein Mamosches dicken Ness. Itzt zählen sich in die Millionen unsere Teute Cap. Slashen sich herum dir die Sternen. Das Gedächtnis von dir wird vertunkelt. Dein Malchus wird bald aufhören. Der jüdische Verseh und Verpflanz ist verbrennt. Auf Teute Großen weinen die Teuen. Der jüdische Cholm und jüdische Wor geschenkt. Sie starben in einem, schlafen Edes Ganze. Euphalach, Freuen, junge Leid und Skenim. A viele deine Seilen, die Felsen, die stammige Lammetwov, schlafen nach Teuten an ewigen Schlaf. Wer wird dich holmen? Wer gedenken? Wer wird dich lekenen? Wer wird dich bänken? Wer wird zu dir auf a verbänkter Brick? A weg von dir, kedei zu kommen zurück. Die Nacht is ewig, verateut Volk. Himmel und Erd abgewischt. Slasht sich das Licht in dein Ohren gezelt. Sflemmelt die letzte jüdische Show. Jüdischer Gott, bist schon bald nicht da. Without Jews, there will be no Jewish God. Or in Cynthia Ozick's crisper rendition, without Jews, no Jewish God. If God forbid we should quit this world, your poor tense light would out. This sounds like a declaration, almost too plain spoken to be a poem. Actually, it's neither. It is a prayer, an intimate address in verse that summons and takes for granted everything that has transpired in history between God and his chosen people. It begins where the male Jew begins his day, with the invocation of the morning prayers. How goodly are your tents, O Jacob, your habitations, O Israel. Here, however, those tents, God's poor tents, threaten to darken when there are no Jews left to inhabit them. The poem also invokes the encounter between God and the very first Jew and its aftermath. Abraham knew you in a cloud. Since then, you are the flame of our face, the rays our eyes blaze, our likeness whom we formed, in every land and town a stranger. Or to put it more prosaically, ever since Abraham recognized you in a cloud, you have blazed on every Jewish face, you have radiated from all Jewish eyes, and we fashioned you in our image. In every country, every city, the Jewish God was a stranger with us. According to the Torah, God revealed himself to Abraham. Here it is Abraham who recognizes God. In the Torah, God elects the Jews to be his people. Here, we Jews formed you in our image. The word ausgeformt, for fashioned, has its root in forging, as by an ironsmith or a sculptor. We get the idea. This poem inverts the usual story. Here the Jewish people, the covenant, our relation to God, have been determined not by the Almighty, but by us. This is a humanist challenge, an affirmation of theological independence. Yet, this denial that God determines Jewish fate simultaneously affirms that the Jews continue to determine God's fate. Repudiating atheism with its claim that there is no God, the poem assumes ongoing responsibility for the God-inspired Jewish people, and it remains actively and passionately within the covenantal bond. God forbid, the poem quips from the human side, that the Brit, that the covenant, be severed. The premise of the poem has so far been left unspoken. Why bother to say the obvious? After what we have just been through? In 1945, when these lines were written, the destruction of European Jewry was as real as Jerusalem's destruction at the beginning of the book of Echa, Lamentations. Also implied is the biblical tradition in which the ancient prophets interpreted catastrophic events as punishment for the Jews having transgressed the ways of God. But where the defeat of the Jews was attributed by the prophets to their unfaithfulness, now God must be held similarly accountable. Quite simply, you've let us down. No Jews, no Judaism, no Jewish God. shattered Jewish skulls, shards of the divine, smashed, shamed pots. These were your light-bearing vessels, your tangibles, your portents of miracle. Now count those heads by the millions of the dead. Around you the stars go dark, our memory of you obscured. Soon your reign will close. How else but through those who adhered to the Jewish way of life and spread the Jewish teachings did the word of God become known? We were your radiant vessel, the proof text, Wortzeichen, of your miracle. The visual image here is powerful. We can visualize these Jewish heads, once aglow with the splendor of Jewish learning and Jewish belief, now reduced to skulls or smashed into fragments of bone. Rather than portraying the lime pits and the crematoria, Glotstein represents the dead as the shattered vessels that once held the divine light. According to the Kabbalah, the divine light that flowed into primordial space was intended to be held in special vessels that emanated from God for that purpose. But under the impact of the light that emerged too suddenly, those vessels were said to have broken apart and the fragments scattered. The prophet Jeremiah famously said in God's name, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water." Once those Jewish heads, those cisterns, are smashed, says the poem, there is nothing more to contain your light. Where Jews sowed, a scorched waste, dews weep on dead grass. The Jewish dream and Jewish reality were both raped, and they die together. Whole congregations sleep, the babies, the women, the young, the old, even your pillars, your rocks, the tribe of your saints, sleep their dead, eternal sleep. In this cosmic drama, the heavenly firmament, the scorched earth, and the Jewish people are all at stake. Jews believed that humankind is kept alive thanks to the presence of the 36 tzaddikim, the anonymous just men, the tribe of your saints, who walk among us. Well, here lie their bodies. With them gone, what then is left? Although Glotstein had not addressed religion when he started out, once he realized the enormity of the danger to the Jews, and he began to realize this in the 1930s, he became what we would almost call a liturgical poet. The place the Jews had claimed for themselves in the cosmic order had brought upon them destruction on an inhuman level that could be addressed only on an equivalently cosmic scale. Nowhere but in liturgy was there a framework large enough to grasp the fate of the Jews. Jews at Sinai had undertaken to hold themselves to a God-given standard. That was a superhuman undertaking, requiring in return nothing less than a divine reckoning. Among 20th century poets, the threatened end to civilization was by no means an exclusive Jewish subject. W.B. Yeats warned, "Things fall apart, the center cannot hold." T.S. Eliot warned, "This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper." W.H. Auden wrote of our world lying in stupor, beleaguered by negation and despair. Glotstein knew their poetry well, but he was writing literally in a different language, a language forged in a most intimate, familial relation to God. Like a child who tells his father, "You'll be sorry when I'm dead," projecting his own fear of death unto the parent, Glotstein puts God on notice. Who will dream you, remember you, deny you, yearn after you? Who will flee you, only to return over a bridge of longing? When my brother David Roskies wrote a book on the lost art of Yiddish storytelling, he entitled it A Bridge of Longing, in tribute to this poem that captures so well the quality of Jewish faith in modern Jewish literature. We sometimes mistakenly imagine that maintaining the golden chain of Jewish tradition requires pious assent and loyal repetition, which may indeed be part of, but has never been the entire essence of living and thinking as a Jew. In capturing the very complex nature of continuing to live as a Jew, Glatstein lets the rhymes say it best. Wer gedenken, wird dich benken. Who remembers you will continue to yearn for you. If we don't, who else will? Wer wird zu dir, auf a bedenkter Brick, a weg von dir, gedeig zu kommen, zurück. The movement away from you on that bridge of longing sets up the movement toward you on the way back. Who else but your people would or could sustain a relationship that is so challenging and everlasting? And finally, all the paradox, inversion, wordplay, and wit of the poem can't hold back the pain. No end tonight for an extinguished people. Heaven and earth wiped out, your tent void of light. Flicker of the Jew's last hour. Soon, Jewish God, your eclipse. Jewish God, you are almost gone. More prosaically, night is eternal for a dead people. Using the same word abik, eternal, that we use for God, the eternal one, the flickering of the Jew's last hour lets the Yiddish show, augurs the end of the Jewish God. Yiddisher Gott, bis schon bald nicht da. The Jewish people itself may soon be the memorial candle for the endangered Jewish God. Yet the astonishing technical intricacy and wit of this poem hardly lessens the grief at the heart of it. Quite the contrary. Through the exercise of mind, Glatstein appeals directly to the heart. When I think of mourning my ancestors in Vilna and Bialystok, this poem is my graveside prayer. Glatstein addressed so many poems to God that we could put together an entire psalter of his verse. One such poem asks God whether we shouldn't perhaps start all over again, a small people in a small land, out of the universal arena, dwindling down to only ours. Another addresses God as a fellow wanderer who has accompanied his fellow Jews into exile. Then there is a poem to the God of my fathers, you with the Jewish head on your shoulders, and another in which, terrifyingly, the Jews going up in smoke inform God that wherever you may be, there all of us are also not. The poems are all heavy with paradox, ostensibly contradictory statements that nonetheless define the situation of abandoned Jews who choose stubbornly to remain within the framework of the covenant. This is not wit for its own sake, but one man's attempt to hold together the incongruous ability of the Jews to continue flourishing as a people. The mass murder that we call the Shoah or the Churban provoked much anguished discussion about the silence or absence of God. By shifting the emphasis to the Jews, Glatstein shows how much died with them, even as he insists that at no time has it been more important to invoke the God for whose sake they, God's chosen, had undertaken so long ago to enter into history. So that's it for today. Next week, we will be looking at Cynthia Ozick's story, Envy or Yiddish in America. And for now, happy reading.